So what I want to do is something from Parshas Vayechi. Very interesting thing. So it says one in the brachos Yaakov. It says bracha to Naphtali. I'm to Binyamin. Binyamin's a Evyatrov. Binyamin is like a wolf who tears up. Baboka yochal adalav yochal ekshal. In the morning he will eat the spoils, the booty, the spoils, and in the evening he will divide the spoils. So what's it talking about? What kind of bracha is that? He's like a wolf.
Say it again.
Binyamin is like a wolf who tears. In the morning he will eat the spoils, and in the evening he will divide the spoils. Another word for spoils.
He eats and then he divides it?
Yeah.
How do you eat it and then divide it?
At different times. I don't know. I'm not sure. Let's see what Rashi says as a reference to. So Rashi says Evhu Ashayatrov. It's a wolf who tears. He says Nive, it's a Navua, I'll show you different future events. One is Shayu Asidin Lios Chatfanim, that they're in future from Shevin Yom are gonna be grabbers. And here's the first thing. The Chataftem Lachem Ish Ishto, the Pilagesh Begiva. So by the story of Pilagesh Begiva, which I'll go into in a little bit, but basically the Pasuk says each person should grab his wife. A man should grab his wife. And we'll go into that. This is the stranger one. But let's go to the other examples, which are a little more reasonable, and then we'll digress to the story of Pilagesh Begiva, which is one of the stranger stories out there. So it says, so leave that alone. And it says, V'nibe al-Shol. Shol was very victorious against all his enemies, and he would grab the spoils of war. Right? And it's quite a possible. Like he went to Moab and to Edom and all the places, you know, they'd all tremble and he'd be taking all their spoils. So Baboker means in the morning is the early stages of, he was the first king of the Jews. And in the early stages of the Jews' success, he would be eating the spoils. Baboker Yochalad. In the morning he'd eat the spoils. And then in the Erev, in the evening means even after the sun set, the Jewish sun set, and we went into Galus, Mordechai and Esther, who like Shaul were all from Shevet Binyamin, they took the spoils of Haman. Because Mordechai and Esther seized the house of Haman, they grabbed it. And these are all examples of where Shevet Binyamin are grabbers. They grab the spoils of Shaul, of that nation, they grab Haman's household. And this is the bracha, that they should be grabbers. And another pasuk says, the Ungla says it means that the Kohanim, the Binyamin, was in the Shevet of the Beis, the Beis Mikdash was in their Shevet, so they'd grab like the leftovers from the Beis Mikdash, they'd be grabbing that. So one question, but I want to digress to Shikidu. But what is this quality of being grabbers? And this trait, which is, seems to be a bracha, that you should be a grabber, and it's a nevuah about that. Like, what kind of bracha is this? What's the whole idea? What's the unifying idea? But before I do that, I have to tell you about what this thing is, Pilagesh Begiva. So, in a nutshell, okay, and you'll see, it doesn't seem to fit the bill exactly. So if you have some idea about what this grabbing is, let's take the story of Pilagesh Begiva, which is a very strange story, and it's a little bit, you know, different. So, the nutshell story of Pilagesh Begiva, basically there was a guy who had a Pilagesh, which is a wife, sort of a wife, whatever, some sort of a wife, who basically ran away from him, went to her father's house, had some sort of fight. He went and fetched her father's house, and, you know, the father wined and dined him. He stayed there. He was happy there. The father said, stay. Finally, after 4 days or whatever, close to evening, he left with his Pilagesh. They went out and they went on the way towards home. On their way towards home, they started getting dark, and they said, what are we going to do? We don't stay in the Gaiish town. Let's stay in the Jewish town. So they went. They were in Shevet Binyamin. So they basically went to this town called Giva. And Giva, they were basically, no one would take him in. No one would take him in. Finally, one person took him in who was not a native of Binyamin. He's from Shevet Ephraim, whatever. He took him in. Took him in and he said, don't stay on the street. I'm telling you, come into my house. Don't stay there. You know, so fine. So he stays there. Sure enough, a few minutes later or whatever, the people from Giva start knocking on the door saying, send the guy out. And we want to have our way with him. If you know what I mean. You know, they wanted to rape him. The men of Giva. So he says, no, don't do it, don't do it. Instead, take my daughter, take my Pilegesh, take them. No, we don't want them. We only want him. So sure enough, after, you know, he realized it wasn't working, the man took his Pilegesh and threw her out the door to the mob. And even though they were, their preference wasn't for this girl, their preference was for him, and they took her. And basically raped her all night long. Okay, this gang of whatever, it's not clear how big, but they basically raped her all night long till the dawn. And when dawn came, they stopped and let her go. And she walked to the back to the house, and she fell by the doorstep. And in the morning, he came out to the door, he opened it up, he says, okay, come, let's go. And it turns out she was dead. You know, like, I don't think they killed her, but they basically weakened her to the point that she ended up dying. So it's a, you know, a terrible thing. The guy was obviously very upset by this incident. So what did he do? He took his, you know, deceased Pilegesh, cut her up into 12 pieces, and sent them to all the different tribes, to all the Shvatim. And they were in uproar. What's going on? Whatever. This is crazy. What happened? This shouldn't happen. In Klal Yisrael, they called a gathering. 400,000 warriors, all the Shvatim, made a Shvo even. Everybody has to come. We got to take care of this problem. They came there and they asked him what happened, and he told them the story. He said, this is crazy. This can't happen in Klal Yisrael. We got to take care of Binyamin. We got to wipe him out. So they basically waged a war against Binyamin. They said to Sheva Binyamin, give us the guys who did it, and we'll kill them. And we'll leave you alone. They said, no. We're not coughing them up. So they basically waged war with Binyamin. The second day, when Binyamin killed many people, Binyamin were major warriors. They say these people in this town of Geba, they had 700 warriors who would shoot a bow and arrow at a distance and would hit a hare. They'd be able to knock down a hare. You know, they were like super duper warriors, and they won. 2 days in a row, they knocked out like 20,000 each day, roughly. But the whole army of Binyamin was like 27,000 versus like 400,000.
Who was knocking out 20,000
a day? The Binyamin. Was victorious for 2 days in a row. Finally, the third day, they asked God, should we go? Should we continue? And God said, yes, go. Tomorrow I'll give you over them. So the next day, they basically knocked out. In a few shots, they had a whole strategy, but they knocked out about 26,000, 27,000 almost. There were like 700 men left of Binyamin by the time they were done. They wiped up at all, basically all of Sheva Binyamin, except 700 people. Then they said, then the rest of the Jews are like, oh no. What are we going to do? We're going to wipe out the whole Sheva Binyamin? We're only going to have 11 Shvatim in Klal Yisrael? Bad idea. But what are we going to do? We constructed the strategy in a way that was designed to wipe them out, because we did a two-pronged plan. We first of all went to war, and second of all, when you want to wipe out a people, you can't knock out every last person. So what they did is we made a Shvua that no one's allowed to marry off their daughters to the men of Binyamin who are left. So you basically knock out their masses, and then the small little guys are not going to be able to reproduce. So that's it. They wipe them out. But now what are we going to do? So we regret it, but there's 700 men left, but we can't marry off our daughters. So then we made a shvua that we can't do it, I swear. So we're stuck. What are we going to do?
There were no daughters left in
Benjamin? No. I think they wiped them out also. Uh-huh. So now they're stuck. So what are we going to do? Yeah, they burned the whole city. They ambushed them. They pulled them out of the city, and then they came around and burned them.
So there were just 700 men?
Yeah, I think so.
And no women?
I think so. So what happened? What they do? Seems that way. I'm not sure if that's explicit, but it's kind of the storyline. Yeah, otherwise just, yeah.
I wonder if the guy that actually did it.
What? Those guys? Probably they're killed, but I don't know. But the whole Sheva basically, you know, endorsed it by not covering them up. So what happened? So they said is like this. The first thing they said, maybe there was someone who wasn't there at the Shvua. When we made the Shvua that we can't marry off our daughters, right? Maybe there was someone there. So they say, look, they saw the town of Yavesh Gilead didn't come. Now, the problem is that the Shvua was, originally when they made this big meeting, they said, you got to come. The whole Klal Yisrael has to come, otherwise you're going to be Chayav Misa. Because we have to fix Klal Yisrael. So basically Yavesh Gilead didn't come and they weren't in the Shvua, but now Yavesh Gilead is Chayav Misa for not coming to the meeting. So they did is they basically went and waged war on Yavesh Gilead. They killed out all the men of Yavesh Gilead, all the older women of Yavesh Gilead, but all the Vesulas, all the virgins of Yavesh Gilead, they basically kept alive. Apparently they were like they didn't, so to speak, weren't a part of the society or whatever. They somehow they were right? And then they took these girls, and these girls weren't included in the original Shua. So they married these girls off to the people of Binyamin. So that dealt with like 500 or 400. There were basically still 200 men left in Binyamin who didn't have any wives. It wasn't enough. So it basically worked a little bit, but not quite. Not totally. Didn't solve the problem totally. So now what are we going to do? We still have 200 men left in Binyamin, and every guy counts. You can't just count on a few hundred people. I mean, we have to rebuild the whole Shevet here. So now what are we going to do? So they says, I know what, we have a solution. All we said is that we made sure we're not allowed to marry off our daughters to Binyamin. We never said that Binyamin can't take our daughters. So they advised Binyamin that around a certain time of the year, there's a yearly dance where the guys would go to bring Karbanos and Shiloh or something, and the girls would go out and have a dance. They do their dancing or whatever. So they says, I know what you guys could do. Is that you guys go, you Binyamin, 200 Binyaminites go when they're doing their dance, and v'chataftem lechem ish ishto. And you each grab a woman. Each person should grab a wife, bring her back with you to your town, and convince her to marry you. You can't marry a woman against her will, but convince her to marry you. And then, the fathers, then they did that, and when the fathers came, so you took our daughters. Then they says, no, we're from Binyamin, we're the guys who didn't have wives, and don't worry about the Shua, because the Shua was only that you guys can't marry off your daughters, but you're not, we took them. And basically they agreed, they rebuilt Kal Yisrael, and sure enough, Shaul and Mordechai and Esther are married from Shem Binyamin, and it worked. Okay? So this is when it says that Yaakov is saying that Binyamin is a grabber, is a ze'ev, a wolf who grabs. So this is one of the references. It's a reference to Nevuah about Binyamin, like Shekiva, where it says you should grab your wife. You grab their wives, so they're grabbers. They grab their wives, they grab the spoils from all the nations, they grab the spoils of Haman, the house of Haman. So that's what it's a reference to. So it's interesting. I mean, apparently it's not referencing when they grab the girl, the girl and raped her. That's not referencing that grabbing. But this doesn't seem to be a very great story, or, you know, and it's not exactly like they were grabbers. They were advised to do this by the Kol Yisrael. So it's not exactly clear how this fits into the bill. What's the idea? What's the unifying idea of this bracha? What's the point of this bracha? It's an interesting story to analyze in its own right, but that's not exactly what I plan on doing here. But maybe passing some of it, we can talk about. Is there sugar around there now? Thanks. Yeah. So.
I caught him. At least.
That's why I didn't stop talking for the last 10 minutes. I was secretly waiting for it to cool down, you know?
Your story is very, very difficult, but I'm thinking more of the other reference of, I guess, during Shaul. The time of Malchus and Golgus. It seems that there's such a thing as an opportunist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Someone who knows how to take it, who can apply themselves in different situations. Usually you see two types, just pulling earlier. And some people, when take advantage of a prosperous time.
Right.
But there's also people who can, but there's on the flip side, there's like another quality that even in a time of like desperation or a time of galus, mm-hmm. you're still able to muster up mm-hmm. like a certain ability to apply yourself and take advantage of different opportunities. I think it's probably more
right.
subtle.
Right.
But, I'm wondering, mm-hmm. and we do see that in Mordechai and Esther.
So. Right. That's good.
It could be, you know, he's describing a certain quality that Binyamin has. I have no idea how that fits into Bilagish's story. Other than, again, you know, it seemed like a desperate situation. That
mm-hmm. Okay, good. So let me ask you a question. What's the idea of the bracha? Brachas in general, or like, what's the point of Yaakov Avinu telling Binyamin Zev Yitrov? You know, like, what's the point of this whole thing? You know? Like, is he making that happen? Is he pointing out a quality? Like, what's the point? Are you following what I'm asking, right?
Yeah.
Is supposed to any of the other brachas?
No, any bracha. Right. No, I mean, we can use this as a model to try to understand what the brachas are. Brachas Yaakov, right? Not all of them, but yeah.
One, so.
I mean, this is the one we're analyzing. But yeah, brachas in general. But I mean, let's. We have a particular, so we don't just have to talk in generalities. Let's analyze this particular, you know? But hopefully what we say will be generalizable. You know?
What's the bracha? I'm a little lost.
Bracha is that Binyamin is like a wolf who tears. Who tears things up. In the morning he grabs the spoils, in the evening, in different stages of history, he grabs things. But that's my question. How is it a bracha? What is the bracha? What is he doing? What does he mean? In what sense is that a bracha? What is a bracha? And in what sense is it a bracha? But that's all he told him. Period.
Is it a bracha or a prophecy?
Well, that's a question. I mean, these are brachos. So it includes prophecy, but it is a bracha. But part of a bracha includes prophecy. But that's kind of the question. If you're asking a question, it seems like a prophecy, not a bracha. I can hear that. But at the same time, these are called Berachot Yaakov, and the very next pasuk says there's a bracha. Each person, it is the brachas that each sheva he gave them. And what did he say? That's all he said to Binyamin. This is the false sentence. So it seems like it's a bracha which incorporated a prophecy. But we have to, our job is to unify those. What sense is prophecy and bracha, you know, unified?
Because it seems like a justification for what they did.
Yeah, but like Shigeva.
Yeah, like what happened, feel like if Shigeva actually was divine.
Right.
It's otherwise.
Oh, I understand. But it doesn't say. It's interesting though, because it's not talking about what who did, what the Jews did, or what Binyamin did.
I mean, without having any like real justification for what they did, like knowing that what they did worked, it would seem that, you know, it wasn't like the loophole that they found.
Oh, that. Well, it seems like I understand. Well, is it a problematic loophole? I mean, it is a loophole, and it does work, and it is like for building Israel. You could argue that it's not a bad idea. I don't know if you need to lean on this nevuah or the bracha of Yaakov. It doesn't say in the pasuk, but like Shigeva, and the rabbi said, "Hey, remember when Yaakov Avinu said, you know, like it's I don't know if they, you know, hey guys, you know the Rashi, which says like I don't know if they had the Rashi at that point, you know, or I mean I don't know. It just seems like it seems to stand on its own 2 feet. It seems like a decent plan, I think." You know, I mean, that's the question, but it seems to be a pretty decent plan once they got themselves in a bind and they're building Klal Yisrael. And
I don't know, I mean, in as much as, I mean, if a person does have a certain, I don't know, it seems like you could almost say, like, that's a certain type of courage or something, like they're able to, you know, pull from within themselves. I mean, if somebody knows that that's internally something they're more capable of, it would certainly be helpful to, you know, it's an advantage to know that.
Yeah. Okay. No problem. Yeah, to know that you have that tendency.
Right. So if the Shev Binyamin in general had that tendency,
right.
You know, certainly it would be advantageous to know that that's something that they're capable of. You know,
right.
Different people have different
constitutions. Right.
Right. I was going to say, like, to put your attention to it, to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And to use what your personality is
right.
In a proper way.
Yep. It's good. Someone else? Yeah, okay, so just to build on what you guys are saying. People do have different personalities. Right? It's true. There are people who are grabbers, and there are people who are lions, and there are people who are gazelles, and there are people, whatever, all different character traits, right? Now, how do we, what's a person supposed to do about that? Is the message, is the idea of the Torah that every person should just be one cookie-cutter type of person? And here's the model of what a Jew is, and this is it, everyone would be that guy. Or is the model, no, there are 12 different guys, or whatever, however many different guys. And you have to realize who you are and realize your strengths and your weaknesses and realize your character traits and work within them. So The latter. And specifically here, he's identifying a trait of Binyamin. It's not exclusively a Binyaminite trait, but apparently it's something which was characteristic of Binyamin and the Sheva, and maybe the person Binyamin. We don't know that much about Binyamin as a person, but it seems to be his characterizing of the Sheva. Is that there, but I'm going to talk about the trait in general, which is that what is chatfanas? What he's saying is grabbing. So I think it means it's like a certain, I would say, like a physical assertiveness that a person could, certain situations demand that a person, or what do they demand? They don't. Certain people assert themselves physically. They use force to assert their position. Right? That's like a tendency. Some people will never use force to do anything. They won't hurt a fly. They will never push their weight around. They'll never physically push. They'll never psychologically push. They'll never grab anything. There's certain people's tendencies, they just don't do that. And other people don't have any problem with it. They have no problem just going up to someone and grabbing something from them. Right or wrong. Now, what do we say about it, someone who has that character trait? So I think that your average mother would say, don't grab. Right? Stop grabbing. You know, you gotta train yourself to never grab. Never, ever, ever grab. That's like kind of like a modern, you know, type of a thing. It's like, in general, people don't think it's like a negative trait. But Yaakov Avinu's bracha to the Shvatim was not don't grab. Look, this is his character trait. There's such a thing as a person who has a character trait to grab. Is it wrong to grab? No. It depends. What are you grabbing? What are you grabbing? Are you grabbing a girl on the street and raping her? That's bad. Are you grabbing the spoils of your enemy in order to assert the malchus of Hashem and the malchus of Israel? That's good. Are you grabbing the Beis Haman in order to vanquish the evil from the world? That's good. Are you grabbing a woman to rape her? That's bad. Are you grabbing a wife to help rebuild Klal Yisrael? Because that's the necessary thing to do in this situation. That's good. It's good. Now, is it easy? Is it easy for a person to just pick up a girl, grab her, drag her to your house, and then try to smooth talk her and marry her? A lot of people would not be able to do that.
I don't want to brag or anything. Right? All right, never mind. I don't
want
to bring you. Yeah. You agreement it with her,
so
I had hair back then, so it's a little different. Got it, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So the point is, it's not, it may be a good idea to do, but it's not easy. It's in general, a person's nature isn't to do such a thing like that. Some people don't have no problem with it. Right? Some people would. But Binyamin was able to do it. Binyamin realized that the reason why all of Klal Yisrael regretted it is they held that we are the nation, we are the descendants, we are the nation which was formed by Yaakov Avinu. And if you get rid of one Shevet, it's not just one Shevet. It's like it undermines our attachment and identity as the nation of Yaakov, which Yaakov Avinu set up. Our tie to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov is that we're part of. We are the ones who came from them, and the nation which Yaakov Avinu constructed of the Torah Shvatim, and they held to just knock out one Shevet is wrong. Now you want to rebuild the Shevet, but it's not so easy to rebuild the Shevet from 400, 600 people. It's one plague comes and they're all wiped out, and then there's no Shevet anymore. So you got to do something about it. So you're going to have to go and grab girls. This is the only solution. There is no other solution. So this is what it takes. Is it unpleasant? Is it a little bit not your nature? I'd rather not. Maybe you'd rather not, but this is what you got to do. And they were able to do it.
That's the same, it's even the same mita of whatever you call it.
Chatzpon, yes.
Same one that they had the chait with.
Yes, exactly. It's
the same thing. Exactly.
It would seem to be that same trait when they grab the girl. I mean, it would seem. I mean, they're not making that connection, but it's that kind of thing. Is you want her to take her? You want the guy to grab him? So there's that trait. That's, I think, the point, is that character traits are not bad or good.
You would think at that time, if there was any point to condemn the trait,
yeah,
because it was
exactly
the same trait
right.
that was used
it's true.
For,
it's true. For the terrible thing. Right, they didn't say, we got to get rid of Binyamin because they're grabbers. No, Binyamin, you're grabbers. Use it properly. We gotta channel our grabbingness, our grabbing trait, into the right situation, and now is the time where you have to muster up your quality of chatvanias and grab. And the chatafta l'chamesh eshto. Sometimes you have to not grab. Sometimes you have to withhold expressing that tendency that you have. But the bracha of Yaakov Avinu is a thought out advice about how to succeed in life. Yaakov Avinu underscores for them their midah, their character trait. He says, this is your nature. This is your nature. Use it properly. A wolf, you have a nature of a wolf. And I think I somewhere saw this or something. Is that what a wolf does, if anyone said, thinks that I don't know anything about zoology and wants to correct me, feel free. But from, you know, assuming you don't know anything about it, trust me. A wolf does is that it kills its prey, but then it doesn't just eat it there because it could be taken by its predators. So it grabs it and brings it into its lair or whatever it is and eats it there. So it basically, it rightfully gets its prey, it kills its prey, but then it grabs it off and drags it, similar to how they're dragging their wives or whatever, and is assertive and brings it and takes its possession over it. So it's saying is that's a certain type of a tendency. And in a certain sense, people have animalistic tendencies. People are a mix between their instincts, which are the same as animals, in a certain sense the same as animals, but then they have a chachma, they have a mind that they can control those instincts. So Binyamin, these are your instincts. You have the instincts of a wolf. Use them. Yaakov Avinu is identifying them and being telling a nevuah of certain instances, underscoring instances. I don't know if he told them all the particulars, but showing him how you could use this property, this character trait, in a positive way. So the message is two things. First of all, I know that you have this trait, and therefore be on the lookout for negative expressions of it. And know when there are positive expressions where you have to take the initiative and do it. Right? Like certain people, like let's say a person's a tough guy. Tough guy has to know, someone has to tell him, listen, you're a tough guy, you can be a little pushy sometimes. You should know about that. If a person doesn't know that, he's going to be pushy in a wrong case. But at the same time, you should also know about it, because if there's a situation where you need a tough guy because there are thugs in the neighborhood, you got to be able to call on that guy because someone's going to have to scare away the thugs. So these are it's valuable for a person to know their tendencies, and it's oftentimes not easy to notice them in ourselves. So the bracha of Yaakov Avinu is he's calling out underlying trends in the Shvatim and advising them, showing them their traits and showing them how to use them, how to grow with them, how to excel based upon their traits, and the flip side, to be aware of them so that they don't stumble in situations where it's wrong, you know, where it could hurt them. And this is a shame to trait of Binyamin, but the very next pasuk says, it says, these are the blessings which he blessed them, and then it says, Ish asher kibber chaso beirach osam. It says, each man, each person, according to his singular, his bracha, he blessed them, plural. So Rashi says, shouldn't it say, each man according to his bracha, he blessed him? Why does it say according to his bracha, he blessed them? So Rashi says, you might think that he only gave the strength of a lion to Yehuda, and the grabbing to Binyamin, and Naphtali the swiftness of a gazelle, and that's it. But each Shevet has this their own trait. He says, but it's not true. He says, Berach Osam, means that they're models. Each Shevet has like a certain trait which they exhibit in a paradigmatic kind of a way. But at the same time, these are human, these are universal traits. You could have someone from Shevet Yehuda who is a trait of a grabber, like a wolf, and vice versa. So the brachos were tailored to the Shevet, but at the same time they were told to everybody, because they're like models of different types of personalities. And Yaakov was calling them out and showing a person how to succeed in them. He wasn't saying, here's my message, how do you be a good Jew? Be like this model. He didn't paint one model, he painted 12 models, or 11, however many there are, you know? So he's pointing out, he's showing different paths of perfection in the Torah. The Torah doesn't hold everyone has to be the same. Sort of. Everyone's personalities are different. You don't have to change your personality, you just have to direct your personality towards that which makes sense, and towards the same. There's an ultimate mission which we share in common, but at the same time, we do realize the fact that different people have different tendencies, and a person has to recognize them, and a parent has to recognize their own children's tendencies. Not every person is the same person, and the teacher, and the world, and we and ourselves. We have to realize not every person is capable of doing the same thing. But we have to know our strengths and our weaknesses and try to... We don't have the benefit of Yaakov Avinu blessing us through Nevuah and giving us this guidance, but, you know, a person should be on a lookout, spying on themselves, noticing their tendencies, and knowing how to avoid the pratfalls of their tendencies and knowing how to monopolize on their strengths. You know, picking a path in life or whatever, which is advantageous to their... plays into their strengths and, you know, helps them avoid their weaknesses.
What would I think if it said also?
Then I think it says that he blessed Binyamin to be like a wolf. Only Binyamin. If you're from Binyamin, then you should be like a wolf. If you're from any other Shevet, it's nothing to do with you. Space out, I'm not talking to you now, I'm only talking to you.
What Shevet tribe?
Yeah. But it's not true, because there's such a thing as, if you know a guy who's assertive, you say, oh, I must be from Binyamin. No, it's not like that. The tribes are like their models, and there is a character or persona of a tribe when they existed, but at the same time, these things cross cultures, and it's not, you know, you could have different, there's a lot of mixing going on. It's not, the lines aren't so strong. So at the same time, there is such a thing as like a New Yorker, for instance. We could say a New Yorker is one type of a personality, and a person from Los Angeles is a different kind of personality. But there are people from New York who are like people from L.A., and there are people from L.A. who are like from New Yorkers. So this, although there is such a thing as like divides which go by groups, at the same time, they're not as strict as one may like them, with, you know. So Yaakovino was aware of that, so he addressed it to each person. He did it, call them. He didn't just say, let me just tell all of you guys 12 different traits. No, because there is a trait of Binyamin. So he did focus it on them and say, Binyamin, listen up, this is for you. But at the same time, he says, hey, everybody else, also listen up. I'm talking to Binyamin particularly, but everybody should know this is a universal idea, and you should take what you could from each of them. And that's what's in the Torah, and we could. A person could look at them, not just as brachos given to individual shvatim, but to study the shvatim and study the brachos and study what Yaakov's advice was and realize how to deal with it. There's advice for people who are angry. Like Shimon and Levi were at a strong anger, and they had a temper, and they went, you know, and they advised them how to deal with it. And, you know, like each of the things. I mean, you could study the thing, but I think the Berel's Yaakov should be studied as like advice and guidance, generic advice and guidance, which could talk to people at different, you know, with different kid personas, different challenges that they face, and to use them to their, you know, use the advice to their advantage. So they were given to one group of people, one particular family, but they were really set up as models and lessons for us till still today.
So they were all physically together, all the tribes when he came.
Yeah, they gathered together. He was all, like on his deathbed or whatever.
So
like he was soon going to die.
They all gathered together. What each one was getting.
And that's how it says. He comes to Shimu ben Yaakov, Yaakov el Banav, Hayomer, Yasfu, gather up and I'll tell you what can happen. Gather and I'll tell you, listen to your father. And then he did this thing. So they were all together. So it wasn't like secretive, private types of discussion. It was, you know, it was talking to everybody, but it's an interesting type of talking. It's like talking to individuals out loud in the presence of a group. And the message was, I'm talking to you personally, but at the same time I'm giving a message for everyone. You know, and I think this thing is, so that, I think that point is good, is about the grabbing. It may not be our nature. Some people may not have that nature. But there are situations where you have to. Now, you could say, I can't, and you could pick up your friend who's a good grabber and ask him to do it. Sometimes that's the right move. But sometimes you don't have a friend. Sometimes you got to do it. And you have to be willing to do something which is emotionally distasteful to you at times, if that's what has to be done. Sometimes you have to speak up. Sometimes it's just what you know, and it may not be your nature. But sometimes you have to try to overcome your nature. Sometimes you're not capable, but we have to realize sometimes it's good to be aware of our tendencies. Then this way we can know. Maybe the reason why I'm not speaking up is not because it's not a good idea, but it's because I have a tendency to not do that. And I have to now, because I can't let that cloud my judgment and to decide. It's true, it's my tendency, but I got to do it. You know?
You want to explain, I think, a little bit the Rambam. What he means by down the middle.
Yeah.
It's like Yeah, remember what you said it's like being able to do what
middle
the
path.
Doing means being able to do what the situation calls for.
Right.
Sometimes you have to be this sensitive.
Yeah, right.
And
then
you average out in the middle.
Yeah, right.
So that's what you're talking about now.
Right. Right. It's true. Yep. But at the same time, people do have tendencies, you know? So it's, you know, it doesn't seem like the idea is that just to become like a robot, just become this one guy. You know, yes, you have to know your nature, and yeah, and get yourself in a way that you could function and go both ways given the circumstance.
It's also the point that you said, like, it's not a paradigm. It's not like there's, like, one sort of character trait or one type of person that everyone should strive to be.
It's true.
Maybe some situations everyone should act the same way, but that doesn't translate to everyone trying to be a certain way.
It's true. I mean, that's what oftentimes is the case in the, you know, in the world is today. Sometimes that's like the educational, you know, paradigm is everyone should be that one guy. You know, everyone should be the guy who sits and learns all day, and you know, whatever, the model citizen or whatever. But there's such a thing as, look, there's Yisachar and Zebulun. Yisachar sat and learned, and Zebulun went out and did business and supported him. There's such a thing as not every person is. And that's best for both of them. They both decided for the Mesorah it was good to set up that type of relationship. But why doesn't everybody? Because not everyone is Yisachar. That's not, look, I'm sure he was willing to learn, I'm sure, more than your average guy, but at the same time, he wasn't Yisachar. And that's, you know, it's important to be able to realize that different kids, for parents, for educators, in directions of the world. To realize not everyone is a boss also. I mean, not everyone is capable of the same thing. You can't make everybody into the same. You have to work with their traits. Right. It'd be like, you know, like almost like you think of like a sports team, like a baseball team. It's like a manager has to know how to use the strengths of the different players. You can't take a, you know, fast guy or whatever, a leadoff hitter, and make him into a home run hitter. It's just not, there's different sort of people have tendencies, but you have to know how to use your strengths and weaknesses and in different situations. But it's easy, it's obvious, anyone would see it in sports, that's obvious, but somehow in life we kind of just forget and we just think like everyone's supposed to be the same. But, you know, the person has to work within their given abilities. That's life. Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's why it's kind of crazy, just a separate point, but the relative world that we live in, like, we live in a world where we're always comparing ourselves to everybody else, and our judgment of our own self-worth is totally dependent upon a comparison with other people, which is crazy, because every person is different, and you are what you are, and, you know, whether you're better than the next guy doesn't mean anything about you. It's like totally in your head. There's nothing real about you being better than the next guy. You're better than the next guy, but the other guy's an idiot and a loser. Yeah, so you're a little better than him, big deal, you're still the same. It just doesn't mean anything, you know. But it's kind of, you know, we live in like a relative world where, you know, our self-worth is always how we are as compared with the next guy, or a neighbor, or a friend, or a coworker, or whatever. But, like in this example, you see different people with different traits. So one guy could learn 10 hours a day, but that's not you. And you could push around your weight when you need to in order to save Klaysman, and you can't do that. So the different situations call for different things and different strengths, and you have to excel in what you're, you know, within your capabilities. Doesn't mean you can't learn at all. Doesn't mean you can't push himself around at all. But each person has to be able to, you know, not everybody can do everything. And that's okay. All right.
You think that's gotten worse over time?
I don't know. What do you mean in the world?
The relative.
I don't know. You have to. I don't know. Good question. I'm saying it's almost like a tendency of man. I don't know. It's probably like a historical tendency of man. It's like we live in the relative world. In order to escape it, you have to get into a rise up to a world of ideas and a world of truth beyond the self. I mean, it's not really. I don't know if it's possible for just a person without any knowledge to do. What else? What is your world? Your world is the social relative world. You have to kind of be able to transcend that, perceive a reality beyond the relative social. You know, it's probably a problem that's always existed. I don't know if it's like a modern thing.
Because another way he realizes it, because he tends not to try to do the thing that he falls short in his mind of when he compares himself to someone else. Because otherwise he would go for it.
Yeah.
So, must be in power, he realizes it's not
right. Right. It's true.
Do you think, like, it seems like on a, you know, a large way, educators, teachers, parents usually try to, you know, try to deliver the message that, you know, the relative world is wrong.
Right.
Like, would you say that really they're kind of double speaking? Like, that's everybody's, you know, most everybody is pretty much involved in the relative world.
Right.
So while we may say that, like, okay, you judge by the, you know, just, who you are, nonetheless, we don't really operate that way.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's not so easy. I mean, you say everything, you're you, but then you give tests, and you basically grade every person based upon how they do on the tests, and you set up like a relative scale. So you have to be true to your ideal. If you're saying it, you are who you are, then don't favor the smart kids and whatever. But be true to the thing and treat each kid as an individual and work with them. And like, the world is set up in that type of relative way, but I think a person has the ability to rise above that. But it's true. I mean, the educational system, the way it is often geared towards, you know, not that type of.
I did one little thing. Seriously, consciously, I would never give extra credit on an exam, because that's just making it even more obvious who's going to answer those questions.
Right.
The ones who are smart, right? So I'm giving smart people more. Right. So it goes against, you know,
right,
I think what's correct.
Mm-hmm. Right, I hear you.
That's what type of extra credit class is to you.
Not what your mother's, you know, first name.
Yeah. All right. Good? Okie dokie.